Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Angry crowds converged on London banks today. Security is tight, and bankers ditch their suits for less conspicuous attire. The G20 summit is in town. World leaders have converged on London, hoping to set the global economy back on track. President Obama has spelled out his agenda for taming the financial crisis, but with outrage against American-style capitalism growing, there are real doubts about whether America's European allies will follow. This hour on Point, we'll hear from European voices on the G20 challenge. You can join the conversation. What's at stake at the G20 meeting? Do you expect anything to come out of it? What do President Obama and the world's leaders need to accomplish in London? In a moment, we'll hear from a panel of European analysts. But first, joining me is Edward Luce, Washington Bureau Chief for the Financial Times. He's in London covering the G20. Edward, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Set the scene for us. What does it look like in London today?
It looks like one big traffic jam. There are big demonstrations that have basically clogged up the city of London, the square mile, the financial sector. And there are several thousand protesters, attempting to goad the police into a larger reaction than the police have yet made. Beyond and around and through that, in the air and in the roads around it, there's just an extraordinary crisscrossing of bilateral summits. I mean, you've got President Obama has just seen President Medvedev of Russia and is meeting currently with Hu Jintao of China. Gordon Brown, of course, and Barack Obama had breakfast this morning, followed by a joint press conference. Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, and President Sarkozy of France are having a joint press conference that is somewhat at right angles to what Prime Minister Brown and President Obama said. As you can probably gather, it's a fairly busy and complex situation.
You mentioned these meetings President Obama has had. How has he been received so far?
Very well. I mean, I don't think there's any tapering off of the adulation that he gets in places like Britain and doubtless later on in the week in parts of Europe as well. There hasn't been any huge opportunity to interact with crowds, so the celebrity sort of element of this isn't really at the forefront today. It's just an incredibly business-like day.
So are the protests anti-American per se or something else?
No, and I think the reason why they're not directly and explicitly entirely anti-American is because it's President Obama who represents America. They're anti-capitalist, they're anti-financial sector, and they're anti-financial deregulation and market fundamentalism, whatever you call it. And, of course, there is a very strong dose of anti-Americanism in that. But it's not directed. There's no burning effigies of Obama, and I'm sure you could have any number of other potential American presidents here now whose effigies would be burning.
What's the U.S. agenda at the G20, and what are the expectations for these meetings?
Well, the expectations have sort of veered from zero to quite high. I think probably they've been a little bit distorted by the domestic political situation of Gordon Brown, who's in great trouble. Who looks like he's heading to a defeat in the general election next year, and he's tried to build up expectations that this will be a grand refashioning of global economic architecture. And, of course, that's simply unmeetable. I think what the Americans want out of this is a very strong statement of unity from the G20 countries that they understand there's a global crisis and that they will do what is necessary to address that crisis. There are differences on some of the details that follow under that heading, most notably on whether there should be a further statement on the need for a globally coordinated fiscal stimulus. And the French and the Germans have been pushing back against that, and I think will continue to push back against that. And both President Obama and Prime Minister Brown, who are on the other side of the fence on this, fairly skillfully sidestepped allowing this to become a sort of big a big division. It nevertheless is a division, and I doubt there's going to be a huge sort of $2 trillion, $3 trillion number on the communique that this summit ends up with tomorrow, which is what the Americans, the British, and others would have liked to have seen. But I don't think this is, you know, the end of diplomacy. Mm.
Edward Luce is Washington bureau chief for the Financial Times. He joins us from London. Edward, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Jane.
We have a great panel with us today. Joining me now from London is Richard Jackman, professor at the London School of Economics. Richard, thank you for joining us.
Hello. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you. Joining us also from Gütersloh, Germany, is Joachim Fritz Vanama. He's former deputy editor-in-chief and now an online columnist for the German news magazine Die Zeit. He's also director of European affairs at the Bertelsmann Foundation, a German think tank. Joachim, thank you for being with us.
Hi, Jane. It's a great pleasure.
And with us here in our studio is Dominique Moissy. He's a founder and senior advisor at the French Institute for International Relations and currently a visiting professor at Harvard University. His new book, out next month, is The Geopolitics of Emotion, How Cultures of Fear, Humiliation, and Hope Are Reshaping the World. Dominique, welcome back to One Point.
Thank you very much.
So I'm curious, what are the headlines in your respective countries today? What is the interest level in the G20 meetings? Richard Jackman, how does the coverage look like in the UK from a political perspective?
Yes, well, it's interesting. Only about half the newspapers lead on the G20 this morning, and a lot of the coverage is more about what will happen with the demonstrations and the protests. There's really quite little coverage of the substantive economic issues that are being discussed, though, of course, there has been some in the past, and as soon as we get a communique on Thursday afternoon, no doubt there'll be a lot more. But as of now, there's not enormous expectations that this summit will achieve anything, and the newspapers are scurrying off onto other more entertaining ideas.
Joachim, is it the same in Germany?
Well, here the headlines are rather deep in black, yeah, I must say, because our job market is downgrading as never before, yeah, and we have also the ongoing discussion about the future of Opel Motor Company, GM daughter, as you know.
Yes.
And so I would say the summit for the time being comes third or fourth even.
Interesting. How? What about in France, Dominique?
Well,
you're not there, but what is the interest
position,
level there?
But looking at the internet this morning, I think France is probably the country where the G20 summit is considered as the most important. If I were to plagiarize Rahm Emanuel, when he said about the crisis, it's a crisis too important to waste, I think the feeling in France would be it's a summit too important to waste. It's an opportunity which must not be missed.
How much blame is directed, gentlemen, toward the United States and this anti-Americanism, the American-style capitalism, rather, that many see as to blame for the global economic crisis that we're in? Professor Jackman, how much is toward the U.S.? How much of this blame is directed toward us?
In a way, I think it's remarkable that there isn't more anti-American-style capitalism in the air, as it were. And I think, as Edward Luce said earlier, there's too much preoccupation in this country with the alleged strengths and weaknesses of Gordon Brown and the way he's dealt with the crisis. It seems to me it's very obviously a global crisis. It's very obviously a financial crisis. And the financial institutions are very largely American-owned and American-run. And it's true that banks throughout the world have made bad decisions, but the instruments which they've have led to and to enable them to make those decisions, the innovations in the financial sector, have very largely been American-led. And I think some of the techniques of risk assessment, which have been proved so disastrous again, were American-led. So I think, as Edward Luce says, it's entirely right. It's not the American government. Certainly not Barack Obama, but the indulgence of free market capitalism within the United States has been at the forefront of this particular crisis.
That said, Professor Moissy, how likely is President Obama to get full agreement on his plans for this financial crisis?
Unlikely. At the same time, one must say that President Obama acts like a damage limitation factor. If he wasn't there, if he wasn't at this moment the President of the United States, there would be raging anti-Americanism all over Europe. But this cannot take place precisely because the President of the United States himself is more popular in France, in Germany, or in Great Britain than the respective leaders of those three countries. But this can last up to a certain moment.
Joachim, in Germany, what does President Obama have to do to convince Angela Merkel of his plans for a financial crisis and for a recovery?
Well, I think it's not the right moment for him to try to convince her, yeah, because if there's something which would make her change her mind, yeah, it can be only the domestic situation in Germany, especially in a year where we have general elections. Yeah. But I'd like to come back perhaps for a moment to that idea about anti-capitalism and anti-Americanism. I perfectly agree both with Richard and with Dominique. The question is whether the shift from anti-Americanism to anti-capitalism, yeah, is a good shift or rather a worrying shift. And in my opinion, it's rather worrying, yeah, because if you start to put into question the whole system, yeah, in a very negative way without having any positive position to take over, for the time being, yeah, then we can get social unrest in most of our countries for the next time as we never would have imagined.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, we're looking toward tomorrow's big G20 meeting. Our panel today reaches across the Atlantic. From London, we're joined by Richard Jackman, professor at the London School of Economics. From Gütersloh, Germany, we're joined by Joachim Fritz Vanama of the Pertelsmann Foundation, a columnist for Die Zeit. And in the studio, we're joined by Dominique Moissy, founder of the French Institute for International Relations and now a visiting professor at Harvard University. Professor Moissy, let me begin with you because there has been a lot of theatrics, shall we say, surrounding President Sarkozy. He arrives at the G20 with quite low popularity ratings at home, and he's blaming American-style capitalism for the global economic crisis, even threatening to walk out of these meetings if his calls for tighter global financial regulations are not met. What is the French agenda in London this week?
Well, first, I want to reassure you, I think the French president will be present for dessert, and not only because he's a chocolate alcoholic or he loves chocolate. I mean, this kind of threats, this kind of posturing is not very dignified, but it translates something. It translates the attitude of the French president, which is rather contradictory towards capitalism. On the one hand, he's a Colbertist. He wants the state to play a major role in the economy. On the other hand, he wants to show to the world that this is an opportunity, this crisis, which should not be wasted.
Isn't he rowing back a little bit on his free market promises that really brought him to power in the first place?
Well, if you looked at him initially from London or Wall Street, you were surprised by the extent of what I call Colbertisme. I mean, this is not a true liberal man in the sense of liberalism or Anglo-Saxon capitalism. So we should not be surprised by his attacks on Anglo-Saxon capitalism today. And he knows that a majority of French public opinion is behind him, is furious at bankers, furious at Switzerland, furious at the existence of Cayman Islands, etc. At the same time, he's also too shrewd a politician to realize that he can't really physically, so to speak, face directly to Barack Obama, knowing this man is more popular than he is at home.
Ah, interesting. To Germany, Joaquin, the New York Times is reporting on an alliance between Germany and France against Anglo-American capitalism, quote-unquote, that many believe caused the global financial crisis. Is that an accurate assessment, this alliance between Germany and France?
Yes, I think so, but it is not new, and it is not so much due to the moment. Yeah? If you look, for example, into the Treaty of Lisbon, which should be the basic treaty for the European community over the European Union for the next couple of years, you find there the words about the European social market economy. Yeah? And I think both Sarkozy and Merkel have exactly that in mind, yeah, when they criticize the American way of capitalism. Yeah. So it is not to say no to capitalism in itself. Yeah. It's to say no to a certain way to promote and to practice this capitalism, and to support once again that Europe is different in this way, and that Europe's invention was exactly the social market economy after the Second World War. I think they find themselves on a position which could be shared by most of the Europeans easily, and I think that makes them the strong alliance for the time being in this G20 meeting in London.
Professor Jackman, what's the agenda of the U.S. and the U.K., and how does that differ from what the European Union may be seeking at these meetings?
Yes, it seems to me there's a bit of sort of cross purposes here, because the key urgent issue which is dividing the Anglo-American side from the French and Germans is question of coordinated fiscal expansion. It's nothing to do with the social market economy, whether or not that is, I mean, most issues in the social market economy aren't really up for discussion at the G20. And to the extent that there needs to be greater regulation of financial markets and financial institutions, that surely is common ground between ourselves, the Americans, and the other European countries. I think the issue has arisen with the case being pushed by both Barack Obama and by Gordon Brown, that it will be necessary for the world economy that all the nations expand demand through fiscal policy. But as Barack Obama said in his press conference this morning, of course, a lot of that has already been done. To say that, you know, the Germans and French have resisted fiscal expansion is completely wrong. There have been fiscal stimulus packages in both countries. But nonetheless, it is the case that the fiscal stimulus in most continental European countries has not been as substantial as in the States or as in this country.
So are you looking for President Obama to push for specific commitments from these other countries on stimulus spending?
I think initially the IMF had the proposal that all countries should put forward a 2% increase in a budget deficit. But I think that has really not feasible, because the differences between the countries in their economic situation and indeed what they've already done is substantial. And this leads to a rather less pleasant situation of trying to identify countries which perhaps haven't done as much as others. And this is, of course, rather divisive, whereas the idea of coordinated expansion was something we could all do together. Mm. If it turns out that, you know, some countries, because they've already got such enormous deficits or for whatever other reason, can't really participate in a coordinated expansion, then obviously the whole thing falls sort of flat on its face. Mm.
Let me bring some callers into this conversation. We have many lined up to join here. Nicholas is first on the line. He's in Rochester, Massachusetts. Hi, Nicholas. Welcome to On Point.
Thank you, Jane.
Yes, go ahead.
Call me a cynic, Jane. The United States appears to be trying to maintain as much of the status quo as they can. The Europeans seem to want to make some changes to the system. That's the Europeans, with the exception of the UK, of course. I think the U.S. Has benefited from the system as it is. They don't want to make changes. Now, as an aside, I find it interesting that your panelists are all from Europe, and when they have a discussion that is centered in other parts of the world, like Africa or Southwest or Southeast Asia, therefore, The panelists are always seems to be Westerners. Mm. But I love your panel.
Well, thank you. Nicholas, let me turn your question to Professor Richard Jackman in London. Professor, the caller says the U.S. and the U.K. may be trying to maintain the status quo. Agree here?
No, absolutely not. I think the we see the situation that we're currently in as a total disaster. I mean, there's never been such a sharp downturn. People are losing jobs at a rapid rate. To allow this to happen again would be criminal. And the only question that we have is that for one country to launch into controls of financial institutions that haven't been agreed and harmonized with other countries won't solve the problem, because it'll just mean the financial institutions go shopping around for whatever is the most lenient jurisdiction. And so that's why it's necessary that the world leaders discuss these matters and reach agreement on standards of financial regulation which could be imposed across the world,
Professor,
or at least across the G20 countries.
Professor Moisy, I think this goes to a deeper point about there being a division between America and Europe. Do you see that? And what's your perspective to that, to the caller's point and to that question?
Well, I think there is, in fact, a division between the United States and continental Europe. For continental Europe, France and Germany, beyond the crisis itself, there is the future of the euro and of the European Union. And what we are saying, America has very badly managed the world economy and its economy, and we in continental Europe should not be destroying the institutions, the stability which we have attained because of the United States of America. At the same time, we tend to be rather schizophrenic vis-a-vis the United States, because we blame the United States and we expect the solution to come from the United States, while at the same time saying, well, America is no longer what it used to be. And this is that contradiction which is, in a way, at the heart of the inconsistencies between European position. On the one hand, America is the guilt country. On the other hand, America is the savior country.
That's so interesting. Here's another call from Vern. He's in Highland Park, Michigan. Hi, Vern. Welcome to On Point. I appreciate you waiting.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
I wanted to ask your panelists, they were speaking about the crisis starting in the United States. How much weight do they give to the notion that, for instance, AIG Financial Products Division is located in London?
And so how much is Europe taking proper responsibility for its role in the crisis?
Well, not only that, the fact that those products, the ones that were, I guess you call them collateralized swaps, and the hedge funds and all the different other things that they were coming up with these unique financial products, the division is located in London. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder how much weight do they give to their status that the financial crisis actually started in the United States.
Vern, I hear it. It's a great question. Thanks so much for calling. Professor Jackman, will you respond to the caller?
Well, I have to say I don't know much about the internal management of AIG, but it's certainly the case that there are an enormous number of banks below and other financial institutions whose head offices are registered in one country but which have operations throughout the world. And with the wisdom of hindsight, perhaps one has been too indulgent in hosting such subsidiary ventures. But if you'd said that 2 years ago, before the crisis broke, I think if our government had said, oh, we're not going to have any American banks in this country, it would have been laughed out of court. And in any case, the banks would have gone and, the AIG subsidiary would have gone and located itself in some other country, and the same problems would have arisen. I don't think that the London is the only place in the world where American subsidiaries were enabled to operate without very close supervision from the domestic authorities. Mm. Someone's mentioned Switzerland as being a place where the financial regulations are less restrictive than in any of the EU countries.
I'd like to take a listen to President Barack Obama. Here he is in London at a news conference with British Prime Minister Gordon Brown this morning. He said he would work with other global leaders to address the world recession at the G20 tomorrow.
I came here to put forward our ideas, but I also came here to listen, not to lecture. Having said that, we must not miss an opportunity to lead. to confront a crisis that knows no borders.
Joachim Vanama in Germany, what about President Obama? How is he viewed in Germany these days since his first venture there when the cheering multitudes greeted him last summer? Is there a disconnect between him as a person and U.S. policy now moving forward?
No. I share Dominic's view. I think we see in Germany, in Obama, the solution to our American problem we have had over the Bush years. Yeah. And I think he's part of the solution and seen as part of the solution and not as part of the problem. Yeah. So nevertheless, yeah, the institutional aspect is a long-lasting one, and the institutions are still made as they were in the beginning. And I think it is absolutely right from Richard to say that there has to be something done and has to be worked upon. Yeah. Let me come back also to your stimulus question, because this is a very, very interesting issue, because in my view, it's not so much a division. Yeah? It's a question of moment and of momentum. Yeah? As Richard said, all our governments had their stimulus package, and Germany had two of the kind, yeah? And now they are just waiting. And if you check carefully the words by our finance minister and by Mrs. Merkel, our chancellor, yeah, you never hear strict and orthodox refusal of stimulus packages. Yeah, I think she would be ready to start a third one if this springtime, this summer, the situation demands her to do so. Yeah.
But I have read even reports that Germans are spending a lot of stimulus money on their economy already, that they're actually the third biggest spender in the G7, above the U.S. even.
So I think that's not the point where there's a real division between United States and Europe. If I don't take Obama, because he came to listen, as he just said, yeah, and I'm very interested to hear what he's going to say over the next couple of days, yeah. I know that Mrs. Merkel went to London with the idea that this has to be the beginning of something, and the beginning of something which goes far beyond the simple question of better regulating and restoring global growth. I think what she has in mind is much more influence from her own deep convictions. Let me quote you just the one example. She was quite a while at the head of the Kyoto process to better combat climate change. Yeah. So she has a global view of the problems, and she likes to have global solutions and sustainable global solutions to these global problems. So the question is not just simply when is the right moment for the next stimulus package, how much should we put into it, how could we better control financial markets. Yeah, all these things are important. So that's the homework they have to do over the next couple of time. Yeah. But I think her view goes far beyond that, and she really likes to have an American president who becomes a leader in this global effort to reshape to shape a new global architecture.
Professor Moisy, what's the French perspective on that?
Well, I think the divisions, the tensions that may exist between Europeans themselves and Europeans and Americans should not hide the revolutionary nature of the meeting that is taking place today. It's the G20. It's global. What is at stake is to save globalization or not. And in order to save globalization, the Western world is calling upon the Chinese, the Indians, the Russian, the Brazilian to come to the table. And I think we have been obsessed so far by our transatlantic relations, but that's secondary to a large extent.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. And for Tom Ashbrook, we're talking this hour about the U.S. relationship with Europe on the eve of the G20 meetings. Richard Jackman is with us from the heart of the G20 in London. He's a professor at the London School of Economics. Joachim Fritz Vanama, he's with us from Gütersloh, Germany. He's director of European Affairs for the Bertelsmann Foundation. And Dominique Moisy is with us in the studio. He's founder and senior advisor to the French Institute for International Relations and a visiting professor at Harvard. Harvard University. Let's go back to the phones where the calls are lined up. First to Atlanta, Georgia. Bishop is on the line. Bishop, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing today?
Hi, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
I got a comment and a couple questions. My comment is absolutely Americans should be the leader just for the simple fact that we're the world's largest consumers of goods. So in that aspect, we can lead the world because we consume most of the goods, and well, not most, but the largest consumer of them. My question, I got a couple questions.
Okay, let's take the first one just for time's sake.
Okay. Do you think with the pounding of the euros and the inflation that's coming with all this money pumped into the system, do you think that the euro is going to get disbanded?
Ah, interesting. Bishop, thank you. Professor Jackman, do you want to try that first? What about the dismantling of the euro?
Oh, no, I don't think that's an issue at the moment. I think, if I understood it right, there is a serious worry amongst a number of people that this sort of massive expansion is going to spill over into inflation, and that will have very serious effects on the currencies of the countries which have expanded most vigorously. I mean, obviously that's a risk, but it doesn't seem to me to be the sort of thing one should be focusing on at the moment, when unemployment is sort of rising by the minute, when deflation is in the air. I mean, until there's some sign of economic stability and beginnings of a recovery, to start worrying about inflation seems to me to be quite premature. So I don't feel that we have yet reached the stage at which there's any perceptible indication of inflation. And after the mishaps of the last 10 years, I'm fairly confident that our policymakers are fully conscious of the dangers of sustaining overzealous expansion once the economy is starting to recover quite quickly.
Professor
Moisi, that's all a long way away.
Let me pick up in the studio here with Professor Moisi as an economic power. Is the U.S. still a bulwark of power? I mean, or is America's global authority on shaky foundation to some extent with the financial collapse?
Yes. I think this crisis has not revealed but deepened and accelerated the crisis of legitimacy of the United States in the world. I mean, when the President Obama says this morning in London, we must not miss an opportunity to lead. Well, to lead where? Where did America lead the world yesterday? Into this quagmire. And so there is that question. And I think there is today a parallelism between American views of President Obama and European views of President Obama. They like the man. They start to have doubts about his programs. So the essence of Obama is great. The performance of Obama start to be discussed. There is something like the shadow of a doubt, and the shadow of a doubt about the man takes you back to the shadow of a doubt about a country.
In Germany, Joaquin, what do you think? Is the U.S. still a bulwark of power? I mean, do we still have the global authority that we once did?
No, it's no more seen as the one power in the world. It's more like Dominic tried to describe the situation. It's more that we see also the shadow of a doubt whether this is not the moment when we could say farewell to the American supremacy, also in the economy. I think we in Europe are used to think in the heads of different partners in a political game. That's what the European Union is about. Yeah? And when Dominic asked the question, where should Obama like to lead to, I would add the question, how would he like to lead to? Yeah? In the old manner, I think that's impossible now. First, because of the weakness and of the experience we made with the United States over the last couple of months. Yeah? And secondly, because we are really now in the G20 world, and I would even say in the G20 plus world, yeah? Because the G20, beyond this first summit, must learn to organize the rest of the world, the 170 countries which are not at the table there, yeah? And if Obama reveals really to be a leader of a new type, yeah? He would be one of those who try to organize exactly this new structure of talking to each other and taking decisions together.
Mm. Back to the phones now. Joe is on the line from Livonia, Michigan. Hi, Joe. Welcome to On Point.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Hello.
The issues are started in the United States with the mortgage with the mortgages. Now, mm-hmm. what we need to do, Mr. Obama needs to order a mortgage rate reset for the United States, and that reset will take effect from the current rate for all borrowers, not people in default, but to all borrowers from the current rate to 2% or 3%. And that TARP money should be used to offset that mortgage reset to the banks and pay them any loss of revenues. And that's what we need to do in the United States. And then if this works, then we can take it to the world economic and the rest of the world. Now,
That's one thought, and Joe, I think it's a good one, but we got to move on to some other calls here who are also waiting to Montreal, Canada. Mo is on the line. Hi, Mo. Welcome to On Point. Thank you for waiting.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My emphasis is that we are looking at the wrong issue. The American capitalism is unique and is the best economic system we have. It is the exploitation of this capitalism by a very concentrated industry in a particular part of the United States, mostly in New York. And if you read the book written by, I think it is The Word is Curve, by, I don't pronounce his name well, Mr. Simak, he mentions in that there are no more than 5,000 or 6,000 people who have brought us to this stage. Now you look at the board of directors of all the 5 or 6 companies of the banks which have brought us to this stage, and you will realize that they are all from New York. And this is the main issue.
This is the heart of the problem for you. I hear it. Let me turn to Professor Moisi. Is there an exploitation of capitalism? Is that at the heart of this from perhaps a world perspective, as the caller suggests?
Well, I think there is a problem of financial capitalism by opposition to industrial capitalism. Those who do not produce, but those who are playing with wealth, have been arrogant, have been dominated by what Greenspan called once infectious greed. But the encounter between the infectious greed of some and the irresponsible lack of control of governments has created the situation. So, in fact, Reagan economics and Mrs. Thatcher economic revolution in Great Britain more than 20 years ago have been condemned by the excess of a few and the laxism of all. But, in fact, we are all responsible because we all played with it.
I'd like to turn to Russia and China for a moment as they participate in the G20 meetings as well. Russia has been eagerly looking forward to the G20 summit, and this is the first meeting, actually, between President Obama and Russian President Dmitry Medvedev. And it was announced today that an agreement was reached between the U.S. and Russia with President Medvedev, and that they'd hope to have a nuclear deal in place before the existing treaty expires in December. A bit of good news, Professor Jackman?
Yes, no, that's absolutely wonderful, but the role of, I think, the Russian and other East European countries are also severe sufferers from this fallout from the financial crisis. And whereas China has been strengthened, Russia has obviously been greatly weakened. And it's very much to the credit of President Obama that he's continued to pursue these very desirable political objectives of having a better relationship with Russia, even through it at a time when Russia is itself very much weakened. I think China is obviously also has been badly hit by the crisis, but it has, but its strength being in the export of sort of cheap manufactured goods rather than oil and the like, has survived much better. But its leaders seem to me to show a lack of global perspective. So I think when one is talking about leadership, the question is with 20 countries, they cannot realistically achieve a consensus. They must sort of try and coalesce around some ideas, and I believe the United States is the country in a best position to offer leadership, to offer programs and policies and ideas around which other countries can coalesce. Obviously not saying nobody else can also do that as well, but given the fragmentation of this larger group of 20, I mean, it must be necessary that someone, as it were, takes the lead in suggesting what should be done.
Professor Moisi, how do you see China fitting into these meetings? Some suggest that this could be the end of the beginning of a new era for the international financial order as it relates to China. What do you think?
Well, I think I fully agree with what has just been said. China is hit, but in comparative terms, China feels that she's coming stronger of the present mess. And she sees in the horizon the coming of a new bilateral, bipolar world with China replacing the Soviet Union as the legitimate partner of the United States. And what President Obama is trying to say to the Chinese is that, well, you can come to the table at the top place, but you have to behave accordingly. And for the moment, you're not acting responsibly given the ambitions which you have. And the problem is that there's no alternative to the United States' leading role, but America is not an alternative either if the Americans are not able to recreate a sense of hope and confidence in themselves and in their economy.
Let's go back to the phones for another couple of calls here. Michael is in Detroit. Hi, Michael. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, thank you. Just on the economic situation, I'm really tired of everyone blaming this whole crisis on the United States. The bottom line in this whole thing is greed, not just U.S. greed, worldwide greed. The U.S. situation didn't cause real estate prices to tank in New South Wales or Perth, Australia. The culprits really behind this are our financial professionals. They're the ones that perpetrated this. They're the ones that caused it. They're the ones that kept it going. It was all based on greed. What is being done to correct that? Because if we don't correct the runaway greed that the financial professionals perpetrated, this situation is bound to happen again.
Michael, thanks for your call. I appreciate your perspective. Here's another call from Buffalo, New York. Ishmael is on the line. Hi, welcome.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I'm just hopeful that the U.S. and the European countries will come to an agreement in solving this economic situation, because the blame game is not going to lead anywhere. Indeed, the U.S. did have some responsibilities as far as the deregulations are concerned, and our involvement in so many different situations around the world. I think the U.S. need to start looking at other countries as equals, not as countries that need to be constantly listening to the U.S. and taking orders. But
finding common ground. I hear that point. To Germany, Joaquin, what do you think? Can this meeting provide a new sort of framework, a new common ground for America and European countries?
Yes, it can, but not immediately. I'm my guess is that if things go well, this will be in fact the beginning of something, the beginning of a wonderful relation, to quote Casablanca. But I think it is impossible, and Ed Luce said that, unmeetable, to imagine in 24 hours to come to this point. So what I would welcome very much is a firm commitment, and I think words are enough there, to go on to work inside the G20 on different levels, to establish the new standards we need,
not to be pushed back into this greed situation just described. Yeah, the difference between self-interest and greed, yeah, is not very sharp. Yeah, mm-hmm. So where you would say it's still okay that you look for your own business and for your own profit is one thing, and at the next moment maybe it becomes greedy because the situation allows it, as it did in the past. Yeah, so I think if the G20 would establish this as a kind of basic rule, yeah, we like to avoid any situation which could be close to the actual crisis again, and we will do our best to create the conditions for that. That would be a wonderful result from the London G7.
Professor Moisi, I'll give you the last word here. This G20 meeting, more of an event than not a process?
Well, I think it's much too short. It comes much too late. But hopefully it will be the beginning of an important process. So in that sense, it is not an event, but let's hope it will start a process.
Mm. Dominique Moisi, Senior Advisor to the French Institute for International Relations, now visiting professor at Harvard University. My thank you to you, Professor.
Thank you very much.
From Germany, Joachim Fritz Vanoma in Gütersloh, Germany, online columnist for Die Zeit and Director of European Affairs for the Bertelsmann Foundation. Joachim, thank you to you.
Thank you, Jane.
And Richard Jackman in London, professor at the London School of Economics. Professor Jackman, thank you, sir.
Thank you very much indeed.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Mm-hmm.